Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 90, Summary of Lord Krishna's Glories, Text 24. Hamsa swagatam dasyatam pibapayo bhuyanga shode katam. Dutam tvanu vedama kachchit ajita swastyasta uktam pura.
Dutam tvanu vedama kachchit ajita swastyasta uktam pura.
Kimbanas chalaso hidasmaratitam kasmad bhajamo vayam. Chodra lapaya kamadam shriyam rite saivaika nishtha shriyam.
Chodra lapaya kamadam shriyam rite saivaika nishtha shriyam.
Hamsa swagatam ashyatam pibapayo bruhyanga shode katam. Dutam tvam nu vedama kachchit ajita swastyasta uktam pura.
Dutam tvam nu vedama kachchit ajita swastyasta uktam pura.
Kim va naschalaso hidasmaratitam kasmad bhajamo vayam. Chodra lapaya kamadam shriyam rite saivaika nishtha shriyam.
Chodra lapaya kamadam shriyam rite saivaika nishtha shriyam.
Hamsa swagatam aktam pibapayo bhuya anga swagatam tatha.
Hamsa swagatam asyatam pibapayo bhuya anga shode katha.
Vedam tat
Vaishnavis. Hamsa, O swan, su agatam, welcome, asyatam, please come and sit down, biba, please drink, paya, milk, bruhi, tell us, anga, dear one, shaure, of shauri, katam, news, Dutam, messenger. Twam, you. Nu, indeed. Vidama, we recognize. Kachchit, weather. Ajita, the unconquerable one. Swasti, well. Aste, is. Uktam, spoken. Pura, long ago. Kim, weather. Ba, or. Na, to us. Chala, fickle. Sauhida, whose friendship. Smadati, he remembers. Tam, him. Kasmat, for what reason? Pajama, should worship. Vayam, we. Chodra, O servant of him who is petty. Alapaya, tell him to come. Kama, desire. Dham, who bestows. Shriyam, the goddess of fortune. Rite, without. Sa, she. Eva, alone. Ekanishta, exclusively devoted. Striyam, among women. Welcome, swan. Please sit here and drink some milk. Give us some news of the descendant of Shura, dear one. We know you are his messenger. Is that invincible lord doing well? And does that unreliable friend of ours still remember the words he spoke to us long ago? Why should we go and worship him? O servant of a petty master, go tell him who fulfills our desires to come here without the goddess of fortune. Is she the only woman exclusively devoted to him? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti relates the following conversation between the queens and the swan. The queens ask, is the unconquerable Lord doing well? The swan replies, how can Lord Krishna be doing well without you, his beloved consorts? But does he even remember what he once told one of us, Srimati Rukmini? Does he recall that he said, in all my palaces, I see no other wife as dear as you? Bhagavatam 10:60-55. Natvadrishim pranayanim grihinim griheshu pashyami. He does indeed remember this, and that is just why he sent me here. You should all go to him and engage in his devotional service. Why should we go worship him if he refuses to come here to be with us. But, my dear oceans of compassion, he is suffering so much from your absence. How can he be saved from this distress? Just listen, O servant of a petty master. Tell him to come here, as he should. If he is suffering from lusty desires, he has only himself to blame, since he himself is the creator of Cupid's power. We self-respecting ladies are not going to yield to his demand that we go seek him out. So be it. Then I will take my leave. No, 1 minute, dear Swan. Ask him to come to us here, but without the goddess of fortune, who always cheats us by keeping him all to herself. Don't you know that goddess Lakshmi is devoted exclusively to the Lord? How could he give her up like that? And is she the only woman in the world who is completely sold out to him? What about us? Om Agana Chimadandasya, Gyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshun Militang Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As I'm sure you've already discussed, this is Shukadev Goswami's sweet ending to the 10th canto. Just as in the Damodarashtic prayers, we end with Namo Radhikaya Twadiya Priyaya Namo Nanta Lilaya Devaya Tubhyam. We end by hinting to the unlimited confidential pastimes of Radha Krishna Lila. And here in the 90th chapter, Shukadeva Goswami is ending by describing the water sports of Lord Krishna in Dwarka with his queens. The topic has been covered briefly by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his discussions with Sanatan Goswami, his instructions to Sanatan Goswami. What we can focus on today amidst such highly elevated subject matter is how Sanatan Goswami received this siksha from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Briefly, Lord Chaitanya explained that Sringar, Madhurya Ras, has divisions of Sambhoga and Vipralamba, meeting and separation. And each of those two has four divisions. And one of those four divisions of love of Krishna and separation is Prema Vaichitya. And that, the Acharyas point out, is what the queens of Dwarka are demonstrating. Mahaprabhu quotes a verse from this chapter to Sanatan Goswami, a verse recited by the queens. The explanation, as you know, given by the Acharyas, is that this is a most highly developed state of love of Krishna, in which separation is felt even though Krishna is present. What we would like to focus on is Sanatan Goswami's reception to that presentation, in which he stressed, how low am I and how high is this subject matter? He expressed to Lord Chaitanya that I am so low-born. My life has been so low. Yet you are explaining to me conclusions that not even Lord Brahma has heard. So we see the contrast that Sanatan Goswami is presenting. at the conclusion of that presentation, life's ultimate goal. You've told me the highest things, but not that I'm mistaking myself to be on that level. I remember once in Los Angeles, some devotees immaturely began exclusively focusing on Krishna's confidential leelas. And when Srila Prabhupada personally corrected them, in the midst of that correcting process, and some were very submissive and some were actually trying to counter Srila Prabhupada's statements. Like, isn't this subject matter the highest? Why should we be barred from focusing on it? And Srila Prabhupada's response was, yes, it is the highest, but you are the lowest. Don't jump like monkeys to the top level of the tree, the top branches of the tree. Unfortunately, one person there pursued the matter further and brought about a nuclear detonation. I said, well, why should we hear about Mother Yashoda when the Gopi Leela is highest? Thunder and lightning broke out. So we always need to remember, and Sanatana Goswami is helping us. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami presents Sanatana's humility. You've told me things Lord Brahma doesn't know, even though I know my position. And to verify or dramatize his position, Sanatana Goswami put straw in his mouth and fell at the feet of Mahaprabhu, demonstrating, indeed, I am lower than the straw in the street, but you've taught me things that are most exalted. He went on to say that you've brought me to the Siddhantamrita Sindhu. You've brought me to the ocean of ambrosia. Even though that ocean is unlimited in expanse, I can only deal with one drop. Such eloquent humility. And if Sanatana Goswami speaks like that, what to speak of us? He said, I can only understand all this if you will empower me, if you will bless me, then I can describe it to others. So he begged Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you please put your feet on my head. And in that way, everything you have explained will become assimilated by me. In other words, without your mercy, I have no hope of accessing this most divine information. How did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reciprocate? He put his hand on the head of Sanatana Goswami and gave him the benediction. May all that I have said be realized by you. And Kaviraj Goswami ends the chapter by offering a benediction to the readers that anyone who hears this discussion between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami will attain life's ultimate goal. That attitude by Sanatana Goswami should be our constant companion. This information is there. This is the last chapter of 10th Canto. It is Bhagavatam. The pitch of the divine ecstasy, the acharyas point out, has almost reached the level of the separation, the madness and separation experienced by Krishna's most confidential devotees in Vrindavan. The intensity is such that the devotee feels one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but obviously not the oneness that Mayavadis talk about, but oneness in love. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described how happiness and distress are concoctions of the mind brought about by our identification with the false ego. And therefore, we have these artificial perceptions of material happiness and distress. It's a production by the false ego, these artificial perceptions of happiness and distress. And the false ego is coming from ignorance, so the root cause of everything in terms of material experience is ignorance. Real life means to find happiness in the happiness of Krishna. But because of the interference by the false ego, we leave ourselves wide open for the artificial productions of material happiness and distress. And we take it so seriously. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talks about the artificial friendship between the false ego and material happiness. The two have established a deep relationship, which is actually very superficial, artificial, and unnecessary. It's interesting to think like that, how our mind, our false ego, has established a friendship with material happiness. The two seem to be always with each other, and they should always be with each other. But when one is free of all these contaminations, then one becomes one with the happiness of Krishna, in that the devotee realizes that the devotee's happiness is Krishna's happiness, in that just like the green bird flies into the green tree. Another reason for Krishna's water sport pastimes, as presented by Shukadeva Goswami in this last chapter of the 10th canto, is an affront to the impersonalists. Such variety is there in this chapter as Krishna sports with his queens. As you remember, the chapter began with the description of Dwarka, the city, and its beauty. A primary purpose of this chapter is to demonstrate the beauty and wealth of Krishna's Dwarka Lila, those two opulences especially, because in the material world, those two opulences generally are foremost in the conditioned soul's mind: power in terms of beauty and wealth, opulence in terms of beauty and wealth. When you hear about Dwarka, and then once your appetite is stimulated, you hear about Krishna's water sports with his queens, you certainly can understand the unlimited variety of the Supreme Absolute Truth. These queens are on such a platform of bhakti that even though Krishna is right there with them, right there with them, they're still feeling separation. It's a special kind of madness of pure love. And therefore, they speak to all the elements of nature, the rivers, the mountain, various types of birds, swans and kuraris, so on. And they are sure that these aspects of nature are feeling what they are feeling. Surely you're feeling like this, just as we are. The acharyas explain that this attitude is similar, very similar to when separated from Krishna in the forest at night in Vrindavan, Krishna's dearmost devotees were questioning all the various plants and trees and animals in the Vrindavan forest. Have you seen Krishna? Of course, in their case, there was actually separation from Krishna. But in the case of the queens, Krishna's actually there, yet still they're feeling the separation. So that is the unique characteristic of prema vaichitya. The chapter ends with Shukadeva Goswami giving a benediction about the results of hearing Krishna's pastimes. Just as Kaviraj Goswami ends his chapter in Majjalila, Life's Ultimate Goal, by offering a benediction to whoever's heard the chapter. So we approach this subject matter keeping it on our head. Even this is Dwarka Leela, what to speak of Braj Leela. We feel grateful to Shukadeva Goswami for his most artistic presentation. Bhakti involves aesthetics. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you get a taste developing for the most pure, the highest aesthetics. Principles of beauty, realizations of beauty. So certainly we can agree that Shukadeva Goswami was so successful in highlighting the beauty and wealth of Dwarka, and in that way our impersonalism is destroyed and we can feel attraction for Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Our enemy is attachment to material happiness. An artificial substance concocted by us. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita. When the mind is free of mental concoctions of happiness and distress. We've concocted those. Or looked at another way. Those concoctions have become our perceptions because of a desire to lord it over material nature. How to exploit material nature. And that is the almost universal syndrome of life today. How are we going to deal with nature for our pleasure? How are we going to deal with existence for our pleasure? We want to be happy. How can we interact with our surroundings, with other persons, so that we are happy? This drive, which masquerades as civilization, produces so much anxiety. Even social surveys are starting to show that in the countries where people are most happiness-focused, they have the most anxiety. It's a paradox. The more you focus on material happiness and try to get it, the more anxiety you have. Whereas in places where persons are not so focused at all on material happiness, they have less of this anxiety. It's very mysterious how the illusory energy operates. When I'm speaking in the Wild West, and of course, India is changing in many ways, but some of it applies. I point out, just see the anxieties that are exploding in you. You're always having to ask yourself, am I happy? Am I happy? You can't be known as a genuine human being unless you're always piercing yourself with these inquiries. And those inquiries are of two divisions about your own happiness. First of all, just as Lord Chaitanya describes to Sanatana Goswami, the highest elevated states of love of Krishna have various divisions. Sambhoga has four divisions. Vipralamba has four divisions. So mundane social analysts have pointed out that the mundane happiness quest has two divisions. First of all, the overall life appraisal. Do I have the overall feeling that my life is worthwhile? I may not be happy today, but when I look at my life overall so far, do I feel like yes? That's one division. The other division is momentary happiness. And don't laugh, it's very important. In fact, it is the most important. The overall life evaluation, that is significant. But more important than that is, how do you feel right now? How do they test that? Social scientists equip people with beepers. And throughout the day, they activate the beepers, the researchers. And as soon as you feel the beeper buzzing or vibrating, you're supposed to write down, at this moment, do I feel happy? So in that way, it can be calculated how much persons are so concerned about their momentary happiness. And you'll notice that the more society becomes materialistic, the more this momentary happiness becomes more important. Even more important than the overall life evaluation. So therefore, you have to ask yourself the question, which is like piercing yourself, am I happy right now? Another version of that is, are we having fun yet? I know this sounds exotic to some of you, but this is the lifestyle of what are supposed to be progressive societies. And then, what other anxieties do you have to torture yourself with? Am I doing what I love in life? And am I following my passions? Am I doing what I'm passionate about? It's not enough to just work. It's not enough to do anything in life. You have to always ask yourself, is this what my passion is about? Is this what I love to do? Sooner or later, I have to do what I'm passionate about. I have to do what I love. And then finally, am I with the right person? So this is the mentality that is being proliferated as advancement. It is simply more and more anxiety. It is very important that people get the knowledge to understand how material happiness and distress are perceptions, artificial perceptions brought about by a false identification. And that false identification is produced by ignorance. Therefore, by giving real knowledge, by teaching lifestyles that make it easier to understand real knowledge, the ignorance is destroyed, and the false ego that is so quick to search for material happiness and try to avoid material distress, it gradually vanishes. So much so that the Bhagavatam points out, for a self-realized soul, the material affairs happen unconsciously, just like when a drunk person is doing something. The drunk person has lost all awareness of what the material body is doing. So then, how does such a highly elevated devotee function without The consciousness being focused on what the material body is doing. The Bhagavatam explains that the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself takes over the senses of such a pure devotee and works the whole show of the devotee's apparent presence in material existence. So yes, that is the highest platform. But at least we can understand that our mind is always producing these artificial perceptions of happiness and distress. The more we seek happiness in Krishna's happiness, the more we become immune to those artificial productions. And naturally, we're free from the anxieties of always tormenting ourselves. Am I happy right now? Am I doing what I want to do? These are all inquiries born of lording it over material existence. Contact with the material energy is not innocent. It's not an innocent affair. It produces contaminations. And the result of those contaminations due to guna sangha, association with material energy, are such that one artificially perceives material happiness and distress as very important, essential features of life. By hearing Krishna's pastimes, our grip on material existence lightens. Our concoction that there's no variety in spiritual existence becomes abandoned. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, when you are talking about this one question that comes at the inquiry you are talking of, am I doing what I am passionate about? Am I doing what I love?
Is that happening here now also? Yes.
So when I was hearing that, I was reminded of this thought that in the long course, if devotees have to sustain the Varnashram principle, that I act as per my Varna and my Ashram. So it is said that as life progresses, a devotee also has to start doing what he likes to do, what he would like to contribute to the Lord. And I understand there must be a difference between what you were speaking, the external desire, that passionate desire. Am I doing what I like? This is a desire outside. And also there is a thought within the devotee community. The devotees slowly also have to recognize what they are meant for, what they would like to contribute to Krishna.
Yes.
So would you explain the difference between these two, the passionate desire and the Varnashram principle?
Often what I try to explain is that most of our devotees should look up to karma yoga, not down at it. There's a subtle difference, as you know, between karma yoga and full bhakti yoga. Karma yoga means we're attached to acting in a certain way, but we'll offer the fruits to Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, all the charity you perform, all that you offer, do it as an offering to me. Full-blown bhakti means not attached to the results and not attached to what you do. So we shouldn't be artificial about that, yet at the same time we should know about full-blown bhakti. Most persons should be encouraged. Yes, do what you're attached to doing, but give the results to Krishna. Yet at the same time, we should be aware of what is fully developed bhakti. So the Varnashram system is meant to organize persons according to their material propensities. And obviously, by acting according to your material propensities, you'll be more stable in devotional service. At the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is demonstrating what is beyond even Varnashram Dharma. So we need to keep both things in mind and firmly understand our particular status. So yes, for most persons, as they begin and advance in bhakti, they should act in a way that's materially suitable for them and offer the fruits to Krishna. But gradually, as one becomes purified, the more developed devotee simply wants to do what Krishna wants. And the happiness of such devotee is in the happiness of Krishna. Such a devotee wants to know, Krishna, what do you want me to do? The fruits are already yours, but how do you want me to act? My senses belong to you. You're the master of the senses. When that attitude becomes so thick, then Krishna takes direct control of the senses of the devotee. Just as he did with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. He put Arjuna into Maya for our benefit. When Krishna drove Arjuna on the chariot in between the two armies, and he saw Arjuna looking at all the forces gathered there, and he saw Arjuna actually falling into the bodily conception of life. This is Krishna's arrangement. He's producing this drama. And then he even smiles about it. Just see how powerful my Maya is. My dear devotee, Arjuna, is right here on the chariot with me. He's still falling into Maya. For our benefit, Krishna did that. Because Arjuna's senses are controlled by the master of the senses. Due to Arjuna's voluntary desire to act 100% for what Krishna wants and how Krishna wants it. That's the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. Nashta moha smritir labdha karishye vachanam tava. My illusions now dispelled. I'll act according to what you say. I'll use my senses the way you want them used. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna, nimitra matram bhavya savasachin. Victory or defeat, or it's happiness or distress, is not your concern. You just be my instrument. So I hope that answered your question. Is there anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.